Right now, someone sitting on their couch in London is, using the spare change from their morning coffee run to buy a fraction of an office building in Dubai.
Yeah, literally right from their phone.
Exactly. There are no real estate agents involved, no bank loan officers, and absolutely no physical keys changing hands. I mean, if you rewind just 10 or 15 years, pulling something like that off would have required a small army of lawyers.
Oh, and a massive amount of upfront capital, usually.
Right, and you'd probably have to physically fly to another continent just to inspect the property. You'd be locking up your liquidity for a decade in this highly friction-heavy, highly exclusive process.
Completely inaccessible for the average person.
Exactly. But today, we are seeing platforms systematically dismantle those barriers.
Mm.
So the mission for today's deep dive is to unpack a comprehensive guide we have on how the best real estate investment websites are completely rewiring this industry. We're going to extract the exact tools, the mechanisms, and the strategies you need to navigate this digital landscape, whether you're managing a large portfolio or just looking to make your very first investment.
What's fascinating here is that we are not simply looking at a physical process that got digitized. We're looking at a structural shift in how capital is pooled and deployed.
Right. The whole architecture is changing.
Exactly. Historically, real estate offered incredible wealth-building potential through appreciation and cash flow, but it demanded a very high barrier to entry. I mean, you needed the down payment, the credit score.
The geographic proximity, right?
Yeah, you had to live near the thing you were buying. But these platforms are replacing those high capital barriers with low entry costs and radical transparency. They're effectively taking commercial real estate and single-family rental models out of the exclusive domain of institutional investors and opening them up to the retail market.
Okay, let's unpack this, because if the gates are suddenly open to everyone, the immediate question is, well, how do we balance risk and control in a purely digital environment?
Right. It's the Wild West out there if you don't know what to look for.
Yeah. And we have a stack of platforms in front of us that essentially act as an app store for real estate, but they serve vastly different investor profiles. Let's look at the absolute lowest barrier to entry. The guide highlights Fundrise, which requires a minimum investment of just $10.
Just $10?
Yeah. But let me play devil's advocate for a second. If I invest $10 and I make, say, an 8% annual return.
You've made 80 cents.
Exactly. I've made 80 cents. Is that even worth the mental bandwidth of remembering my password? Like, what is the actual mechanism at play here?
Well, the mechanism is a digitized real estate investment trust, or a REIT. Traditionally, a REIT is a company that pools money from thousands of investors to buy and manage a portfolio of properties.
Like a bunch of apartment complexes or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or a strip of warehouses. They collect the rent, pay the expenses, and pass the net income back to the investors as dividends. What Fundrise does is automate that entire pooling and dividend distribution process down to the micro level.
Okay, but what about the 80 cents?
Right. To answer your question about the 80 cents, I mean, the $10 minimum is primarily a psychological bridge.
Oh, I see. It just gets you in the door.
Exactly. It removes the intimidation factor. The wealth generation isn't coming from that single $10 bill. It comes from the automated, continuous micro contributions that the platform encourages you to set up.
Ah, so it's a habit building tool.
Yeah. Those small amounts then compound over time without you ever having to sit down and analyze a specific property.
That makes total sense. It's an engine designed for continuous drip investing. But then we have another low barrier platform in the guide, Osul Gamma, with a 500 SAR minimum. And they use a completely different mechanism, right? Fractional ownership backed by blockchain technology.
Yes, which sounds incredibly futuristic.
It does. Help us visualize that. How does a blockchain actually secure physical property rights?
Well, think of traditional property ownership like a paper deed sitting in a dusty county clerk's office.
Right. It takes forever to do anything with it.
Exactly. It takes time to verify, transfer, divide. Blockchain tokenization replaces that paper deed with a programmable digital smart contract.
Okay, so the property is held by a contract.
The property is legally held by an entity, and the ownership of that entity is divided into digital tokens. You can think of a token like a cryptographic coat check ticket at a museum.
A coat check ticket, okay.
Yeah. The ticket itself isn't the coat, but it provides immutable, mathematically verified proof that you own the right to claim that specific asset.
And because it's a blockchain.
Right. This ledger is distributed across thousands of computers, meaning it cannot be secretly altered or forged. It essentially builds transparency tracking directly into the architecture of the investment.
That is fascinating. The source also points out a critical differentiator for Osul Gamma, though. It offers Sharia-compliant options, and, you know, that term gets thrown around a lot as a buzzword. Mechanically, what does that actually mean for the structure of the investment?
Mechanically, a Sharia-compliant financial framework prohibits the payment or collection of interest.
Usury, basically.
Exactly. It also mandates that all investments must be backed by tangible assets, and the risk has to be shared equitably between the parties.
So no weird hidden debt structures.
Right. In the context of Osul Gamma, this means the underlying real estate cannot be heavily leveraged with traditional interest-bearing bank debt.
Okay, so where do the returns come from then?
The returns generated for the investor come strictly from the actual rent collected and the physical appreciation of the brick-and-mortar asset itself. It's not coming from complex debt engineering.
Wow. So it is a highly specific structural framework merged with cutting-edge fintech.
Exactly. It's a very unique hybrid.
Okay, so we have digital tokens and micro-REITs.
Yeah.
But what if a listener doesn't want their money in a giant tool or a digital ledger? What if they want to own an actual physical house with a front door and a roof, but they still want to buy it from their laptop?
Right, they want the classic landlord experience, just modernized.
Yeah. The guide moves us into the middle ground here with platforms like Roofstock, where minimums range from, I think, $5,000 to $20,000.
Mm.
Here, you are buying an entire tenant-occupied single-family home.
Right. This is where we shift from passive fractional investing to direct ownership, but with the friction removed. The unique mechanism of Roofstock is that you are buying a turnkey cash flow operation.
Turnkey meaning it's ready to go day one.
Exactly. The properties listed are already generating income from day one because the tenants are already living there with an active lease.
Okay, I have to pause you there. Because the immediate practical anxiety for any investor buying a house sight unseen from 1,000 miles away is, well, what happens if the tenant trashes the place?
Oh, absolutely. That's the first thing people think of.
Right. Or what if I'm buying a house with a failing foundation? How does the platform mitigate those incredibly physical risks?
That is the crucial question. And it really comes down to the platform's vetting and management plumbing. Before a house is ever listed on Roofstock, it goes through a proprietary certification process.
So they don't just let anyone list a house?
No, not at all. They facilitate independent third-party property inspections, title checks, and they run historical valuation algorithms to ensure the house isn't a lemon.
Okay, but what about the tenant who decides to put a hole in the drywall?
Right. So as for the tenant trashing the place, Roofstock integrates with a network of certified local property managers. For a percentage of the rental income, those local agencies handle the 3 a.m. leaky toilet calls.
Which nobody wants to deal with.
Exactly. They handle the rent collection, the tenant screening. The investor simply logs in to review the monthly statements. You own the physical asset, but you outsource the physical labor.
It's essentially buying an established small business and hiring a general manager on day one.
That's a perfect way to look at it.
In that same tier, the source highlights Real Time Mogul, which has a $5,000 minimum. They seem to act as a bit of a stepping stone, offering a mix of those broad REITs we talked about, but also giving investors access to private deals for commercial properties.
Yeah, they are really catering to the investor who wants to customize their risk profile.
How so?
Well, you might put half your capital into their highly diversified REIT for stability, you know, a very broad net, and then use the other half to take a targeted risk on a specific apartment complex renovation they've listed as a private deal.
Ah, so you can play both sides, which perfectly bridges us to the heavy hitter in the guide, CrowdStreet. Now, their minimum jumps significantly to $25,000. Why the massive jump in the entry ticket?
The jump is because CrowdStreet focuses on institutional-grade opportunities through private placements.
Private placements?
Yeah.
Meaning they aren't public stocks.
Right. A private placement is an offering of unregistered securities. Because these large-scale commercial developments, like a massive office park or a multifamily complex, because they are not registered with the SEC the same way a public stock is, they don't have the same public disclosure requirements.
Okay, so that means more risk.
Exactly. Therefore, regulations typically require investors to be accredited. This means proving a certain high net worth or income level. The government essentially mandates that you must be wealthy enough to absorb a potential total loss before you are allowed to participate.
Wow. So to counterbalance that risk, what does the platform do?
CrowdStreet's defining mechanism is a notoriously rigorous internal vetting process. They evaluate the sponsor's track record, the local market economics, and the entire business plan before ever allowing the deal on their platform.
Okay, I am looking at this entire landscape we just mapped out, and I gotta be honest, the cognitive load is staggering.
Oh, it's overwhelming at first.
If I have a choice between buying a tokenized fraction of an asset in the Middle East for a few hundred dollars or dropping 25 grand into a private placement for a commercial build in Texas, I mean, how do I even begin to evaluate these side by side? It feels like comparing apples to, well, skyscrapers.
That is exactly why you cannot evaluate them purely on the underlying asset. You have to evaluate the specific features of the platforms themselves.
The plumbing, basically.
Exactly. The source material lays out five comparative metrics that function as a diagnostic toolkit. We've discussed the first, minimum investment.
Right.
The second is transparency. You need to look at the reporting cadence. Does the platform provide clear quarterly financial breakdowns, and do they explicitly outline the worst-case scenario risk disclosures?
Basically, are they honest about how bad things could get?
Exactly. If a platform obscures who the actual developers are or what specific assets are in the fund, you walk away.
That makes sense. Now, the third feature is liquidity options. And traditional real estate is famous for being illiquid. I mean, you can't just sell a four-bedroom house on a Tuesday afternoon because you need the cash.
No, you definitely cannot.
These platforms claim to solve that, but I'm a bit skeptical. How liquid is this money, really?
It's a spectrum, and it is vital to understand the mechanics here. Some platforms use scheduled exits. You might invest in a fund that specifically locks up your capital for a 5 to 7 year hold period while they develop and eventually sell the property.
So you literally cannot touch that money?
You cannot touch it. It's locked. Now, other platforms, particularly tokenized ones like Osul Gamma, might facilitate a secondary market where you can sell your digital shares to other investors.
Okay, so that sounds more like a stock market.
It does, but there is a counterintuitive reality you have to prepare for here. A secondary market is only liquid if there are willing buyers.
Oh, right.
In a severe market crash, if everyone rushes for the exit simultaneously, the token price will plummet. Or the platform might even temporarily freeze redemptions to protect the underlying asset.
Wow. So digital platforms reduce friction, but they don't actually eliminate the fundamental illiquidity of physical concrete and steel.
Exactly. It's still real estate at the end of the day.
That is a phenomenal point.
Yeah.
Okay, so the fourth metric is the user interface. The dashboard, the tax document generation, the alerts.
Right. If the plumbing of the site is clunky, you just won't actively monitor your money.
I know I wouldn't. And the fifth metric is geographic scope. The guide's FAQ section points out a fascinating divide here. Platforms like CrowdStreet and Fundrise are heavily focused on the domestic U.S. market. But Osul Gamma opens up access to emerging international markets in the Middle East. That shifts your geopolitical risk profile entirely, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Think about it. If all your traditional and digital real estate is concentrated in your home country, your wealth is entirely tethered to a single central bank's interest rate policies and local economic cycles.
Which is a lot of eggs in one basket.
Right. Global platforms allow you to decouple your capital from your local economy.
But regardless of where the property is located, we have to talk about the silent killer of wealth building mentioned in the guide, the fees.
Oh, yes. The fee.
The source explicitly warns about the 1% management fee. Now, on the surface, a 1% fee sounds like a rounding error. It sounds totally harmless.
It sounds harmless until you understand the mathematics of how it is applied over a decade of compounding. You really have to look at the mechanism of the fee structure. Is the platform charging a fee based on AUM assets under management?
Wait, meaning they take 1% of your total principal every year, regardless of whether the property actually generated a profit.
Yes, exactly.
That is like a slow leak in a water pipe.
It's exactly like that. Or alternatively, are they charging a performance fee where they only take a cut of the profits generated above a certain threshold?
Okay, so a performance fee actually aligns the platform's incentives with my own. They only eat if I eat.
Exactly.
The guide also mentions checking whether fees are deducted before or after the returns are calculated. Why did that timing matter so much?
Because it completely alters your realized gains. If a platform advertises a projected 8% return, but they deduct their operating costs and management fees after that number is calculated, the money actually landing in your bank account might be closer to 6.5%.
Oh, wow. That's a huge difference.
But if they calculate the fee before reporting the net return, that 8% is genuinely yours. You have to dig into the prospectus to find out.
Which brings us directly to the research phase. The guide emphasizes the concept of due diligence. What does that actually look like for a listener? Are we just looking at the platform's shiny projected return charts?
If you are making a substantial investment, you need to bypass the marketing dashboard entirely.
Don't trust the glossy brochures.
Exactly. The guide instructs investors to utilize the platform's data rooms to download the actual circulars and financial statements. You need to investigate the sponsor history. Who is the physical developer executing this project? And have they successfully completed similar projects in the past?
Right.
Crucially, you must understand the IRR, or internal rate of return, projections.
Okay, break down IRR for us, because that is a term that trips up a lot of new investors who just want to know, you know, how much money will I make?
Right. So total return tells you how much money you made in absolute dollars. IRR factors in the speed at which you made that money.
The time value of money.
Exactly. Earning a $10,000 profit over 2 years is fundamentally a better investment than earning a $10,000 profit over 10 years, because your capital was tied up for less time and can be reinvested sooner. IRR gives you a percentage that accounts for the timeline of when cash is actually flowing back to you.
That is incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so we understand the underlying mechanics, the liquidity traps, and how to decode the fee structures. How do we actually execute? The source material breaks down the investor's playbook into a surprisingly frictionless five-step process.
The first phase is essentially regulatory and preference matching. Step one is creating the account, which goes way beyond just an email and password.
Right, they need to know you are who you say you are.
This is where the platform conducts rigorous identity verification. And if you're targeting those commercial private placements, this is where you submit your financial documents to clear the accredited investor check.
Got it. And step two is setting preferences.
Yeah.
You are essentially programming the platform's algorithm.
Yeah.
You define your target location, your preferred asset type, like a multifamily unit versus an industrial warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
You set your target IRR and your timeline.
Mm-hmm. Step three is reviewing the listings the platform generates for you, utilizing all those data rooms and circulars we just talked about.
Then step four is the actual capital deployment.
Yeah.
You fund the account and execute the trade directly through the portal.
Yeah.
And step five is the ongoing monitoring via the dashboard, tracking your quarterly distributions and pulling automated tax documents. It's a streamlined process, but the guide is very clear that onboarding easily does not equate to building wealth easily.
No. Not at all. You need a deliberate scaling strategy.
And the text outlines a three-pronged approach for that. First, start small. Utilize those low minimums we discussed. Second, diversify early across different property types and geographic regions. I mean, if the commercial office sector takes a hit, your single-family rentals in another state might hold steady. And third, which seems to be the linchpin of the whole strategy, reinvest your distributions.
Reinvesting is how you activate the power of compounding. When a property pays out a quarterly dividend, the instinct might be to transfer that cash straight to your checking account.
Buy a nice dinner or something.
Right. But the strategy here is to take that dividend and immediately deploy it into a new fractional share or another REIT. You use the cash flow from your first investment to purchase your second investment, creating a self-sustaining loop.
But executing that loop requires sitting at your computer, analyzing data rooms, and making decisions in total isolation. And the guy's FAQ points out that relying solely on the platform's own marketing or their internal forums is a huge blind spot.
It's an echo chamber.
Right. You need independent analysis. Where does an investor go to pressure test these digital strategies?
You have to seek out third-party communities. The source highlights platforms like BiggerPockets, independent real estate subreddits, and analytics tools like Property Data or Argum.
Argum is the one for the Middle East markets, right?
Yeah. Yes. Argum is fantastic for tracking macroeconomic trends and benchmarking asset performance over there. But the forums are where you gather the qualitative data.
Meaning, the quantitative data on the dashboard tells you a developer projects a 15% IRR. But the qualitative data on a Reddit thread tells you that specific developer is historically terrible at communicating delays.
Exactly. Or that a platform's secondary market is currently frozen. You have to synthesize the hard numbers with the community sentiment.
It's the synthesis of the platform's raw data and the collective experience of other investors that transforms you from a novice into a sophisticated digital operator.
You hit the nail on the head.
Here's where it gets really interesting today. The source explicitly uses the phrase that these websites reward continuity. I love that framing. This entire ecosystem we've discussed today is built on incredibly fast, high-tech infrastructure. You know, blockchain ledgers, instant bank transfers, algorithmic matching.
Very flashy tech.
But the actual wealth generation relies entirely on a very old-school, analog human trait. Discipline. It is a data-driven approach to long-term holding. The technology removes the friction of entering the market, but it does not remove the need for patience once your capital is actually deployed.
That perfectly synthesizes the core lesson of the guide. Ultimately, the mechanisms, the platforms, and the data rooms. They're just tools. Your personal financial goals must dictate the architecture of your portfolio.
Right.
If your primary goal is replacing a monthly salary, your focus should likely be on the turnkey, tenant-occupied homes generating immediate cash flow. If your goal is aggressive, long-term capital appreciation, and you have a high risk tolerance, well, perhaps the commercial private placements are your avenue.
It all depends on what you want out of it.
Exactly. The transparency is there, the low barriers are there, but the strategic discipline has to come from you, the investor.
We have spent this deep dive unpacking how digital platforms allow you to acquire a slice of the real estate pie from anywhere on Earth, instantly. We've explored the plumbing of blockchains, the mechanics of remote property management, and the mathematics of fee structures. But it leaves you with a broader question to ponder. If you can buy tokenized shares of a physical building in a completely different hemisphere, trade it like a digital stock, and never once walk through its doors, how does this completely frictionless experience change our fundamental connection to the neighborhoods we are investing in? When a community's physical homes and local businesses are abstracted into data points on a global dashboard, what happens to our sense of place? Something to think about the next time you are analyzing a property's IRR instead of its curb appeal. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the fine print and keep exploring.